This NBA season, make every three-pointer, alley-oop, and buzzer beater even more exciting with FanDuel. You can bet on everything from first baskets and number of dunks to which player will drain the most threes. Or stack your bets with the same-game parlay for a shot to win even bigger. It's quick, easy, and you'll get your winnings fast. So download the app today and see why we're North America's number one sportsbook. Make every moment more with FanDuel. 19 plus and physically located in Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-866-531-2600 or visit connectsontario.ca.
Hello and welcome to the Buckets and Tea NBA Show. I'm your host, Catherine Eicher. Thanks so much for tuning in to this week's episode. Today, joining me, he's friend of the podcast, your Locked On Raptors friend. It's Sean Woodley. How you doing, buddy?
I'm great. It's lovely to chat with you, Catherine. It's been far too long. I forget the format. I'm not supposed to have tea with me, am I, right?
We can just have water. I actually left my water in the kitchen and now we've already started recording. So I'm just going to have to wing it. We did.
Rub it in for a second. That's good water.
Oh my God. I'm going to chug my whole bottle of water like the second this is done. We did talk about having a tea. And I remember on a previous episode, you told me that every guest should have a cup of tea.
I said that?
Yeah, you did.
I'm just reusing my
own
bits.
I recall you had a David's Tea brand tea that felt unique to David's Tea. Maybe it was like chocolatey something.
Oh yeah, I think I had like a chocolate chai or something. Coming back to me now.
And then I was like, you know, I'm more of a night. Yeah, like I drink tea at night. Like I have a coffee to start the day and then I have tea at night.
Yeah.
Midday is water.
Yeah, me too. One more second.
I can shut this podcast down.
I'm ready to podcast my ass off. Let's go.
Oh my God. Filled with regret. Two minutes into the podcast. Filled with regret. Well, it was great having you on for the last time, Sean.
Bye.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, per usual, we've got, you know, lots of NBA stuff to talk about, a bit of Raptor stuff to talk about as well. But first, I want to dive into a bit with Team Canada because it seemed as though the brackets were announced, but it feels like the brackets weren't fully announced. Sean, if you can correct me. But I got really excited because I was like, wait a second. Are we not in the American bracket? Because that always bodes well.
Mm-hmm. Which they're not. That's good. They're not in the group with the States, which is number one. So yeah, yesterday they announced that Canada is going to be in a group, the men's side. The women's bracket is mostly set. There's one group that has two spots to be filled with qualifying tournaments, but Canada's bracket's set on that. And I think they're taking on Australia. What was the other team? I have the list here. I keep on losing my spot in this thing. The women's group is France, the host team. They're seventh ranked in the world. You got third ranked Australia, Canada's fifth ranked, and then 12th ranked Nigeria. So pretty stacked group with the host city or the host country and Australia in there. Yeah, the Canadian side, they will be in a group alongside also Australia, fifth ranked. And then the winner of the qualifying tournament in Spain, and as well as the winner of the qualifying tournament in Greece. So there's like a whole whack of teams that could be in the conversation in Spain. Spain's hosting it. They've got the Bahamas, Finland, Lebanon, Poland, Angola. So probably Spain is going to be in their group, I would guess, unless Lowry Markkanen goes nutso. And then the Greece.
Yes, he could.
Totally. The tournament in Greece is fascinating. You've got Croatia, the Dominican Republic, Egypt, Greece, New Zealand, and Slovenia. So you're going to have like Giannis and Luka in this group together. Only one of them is going to make the Olympics, and then one of them will be in Canada's group. So pretty wild stuff. Before we dive into anything, how nice is it, Catherine, to not have to worry about winning a last chance Olympic qualifying tournament again? Because Oh, yeah. My God. Venezuela in 2015, losing to them, going and having the home, like paying a ton of money to host it in Canada back a few years ago when they lost to the Czech Republic. Like, terrible stuff. I'm very glad that it's not a thing we got to worry about anymore. Thank God they qualified and punched their ticket to the World Cup.
I mean, I completely agree. And I feel like I'm very excited for these Olympics because I do feel like more so on the men's side that we do have a chance to medal. And that's not shade to the women's side. Everybody who listens to this knows I'm a big supporter of women's basketball, but like, Team Canada on the women's side, we really just squeaked in there and I'm so proud of us, but we kind of just squeaked in. Where I feel like this Olympics is almost, it's kind of going to be like the 2017 NBA season where like the Warriors winning was sort of like a foregone conclusion, like when they had Kevin Durant, but it's still going to be very competitive. That's kind of how I feel about it going into this year's Olympics.
Yeah, I mean, like the States will send their very best team and that's going to be hell for everyone to deal with. We'll see, like, I'm fascinated what happens if it's like Nuggets and say Celtics in the finals and does Jason Tatum play? Does Jaylen Brown play? Like Jason Tatum might be the best American player right now. And so if he's making a deep finals run, does he play? I would imagine Jokic will play in the Olympics, even though it's going to be a long run for them, one would assume. But yeah, it's always like a tough one to figure out, like who's going to have like legs in for a tournament in late July, early August.
Yeah. Or even Jamal Murray as well.
Murray's a really fascinating one because he wasn't on the World Cup team, obviously, because of the finals. I wonder if the Olympics are enough of a draw to get him to do it. Also, that requires him to not get hurt, knock on wood, in the playoffs for him to be available. But yeah, you know, I think they're kind of putting a lot of hope on Murray being there in order for them to really have a shot at a medal. Cause like, as much as they finished third last year, it's just not like the best on best tournament, right? A lot of guys not playing. That States team that was sent over was just like absolute garbage. It was just a really bad team. Jaren Jackson Jr. forgot how to play basketball and they had no centers after that. Cause he fouled himself out in 3 minutes of every game. So yeah, I think it's going to be a way harder road. I'm glad they're not in a group with the States, and like Serbia and the States are going to be in the same group, which is going to be pretty awesome. You know, both of those teams will probably get through. They have a qualifying tournament winner, and South Sudan is going to be in their group. So they're probably going to make their way through, but yeah, it's going to be just like a bear of a pathway for Canada because all of these teams are really good. There's no easy group. And so, you know, whoever comes out of those last chance tournaments, unless you get lucky and Poland goes on a run, you're going to be up against some pretty stiff competition, but that's kind of what it's all about, right? Like they're at the Olympics. This is what they did it for. And I think they'll do better than the Steve Nash team did back in 2000, at least.
Yeah. Well, definitely they're going to do better than that. I would hope. I think that team was like eighth or something like it.
Yeah. They didn't do so hot. Yeah.
Yeah. They kind of barely did anything. And then Team Canada collapsed for minimum a decade. That's interesting about like Jason Tatum and all that too, because I feel like, man, is Jason Tatum the best American player? I don't know.
Gonna finish the highest in the MVP voting of any American player. I don't know if that makes him the best American player, but
maybe. Yeah, I think
you'd probably take Kevin Durant over him right now. Maybe not. Kevin Durant's old, so I don't know.
I think it's just because Kevin Durant's old. I think Kevin Durant is phenomenal. I would still, a healthy Kevin Durant, I would still pick over Jason Tatum today.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm sitting here being like, Jason Tatum is the best American. We're not doing Celtics propaganda here. Like, get out of here, Sean.
Also, you know what? I think Anthony Edwards is going to have something to say about that, too. Like,
That dude's...
he's really coming on, and he just had, like, you know, easily the dunk of the year. Maybe one of the dunks of the... Thrunk of the decade, maybe.
He gave a guy a head injury because he dunked so hard while also hurting his own hand doing said dunk. It's like the coolest dunk there is.
It adds to the lore of the dunk that
like Gerald Green losing a finger from dunking so hard as a youth. Like that is dunk clout as like as good as your dunk clout can get.
Yeah.
But like Anthony Edwards, pretty damn close. Yeah, that was nuts.
Yeah, yeah, really just throwing that in there because why not? All right, excited for Team Canada, excited that we don't have America in our qualifying round bracket. Let's move on to kind of an interesting story that has been looming over the past 24 hours. So Mark Stein reported that the 76ers are interested in Paul George if he makes it to free agency this year. So, you know, I mean, this is super interesting because I didn't, low-key, did not know Paul George had suitors, okay? And I'm not saying that to be the shadiest person on planet Earth, but, like, I legit did not know that that was a thing. It's kind of an interesting fit. I feel like, you know, especially after like the James Harden trade, it's like, man, these two just keep talking to each other. It's kind of weird.
But Daryl Morey is like a sick man. He just needs stars. It's all he can do. He just needs stars on his team and he's thirsty without them.
Yeah. And also too, like, I mean, I don't, not that you know, you can't replace Joel Embiid, but if you're looking for like some sort of like Joel Embiid insurance, just from like an offensive, like scoring perspective, mm-hmm. I don't know if Paul George is your guy. Like he might be for a year.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he's your guy long-term. Like to me, it's like, wouldn't you want to try and find somebody younger with fresher legs? Also, I really don't see Paul George leaving the Clippers. Like, that would be pretty nuts.
That's the thing, right? Is, like, the whole thing was, oh, we're all the L.A. boys. We're going to L.A. and we're going to die in L.A. This is where we live now. And this is where we'll be buried. We're never leaving the Clippers. We're going to go to, you know, Steve Ballmer's new expensive dome stadium. And, like, we have our, like, gravestones already picked out. They're going to be buried underneath the stadium when we die. Like, the plan... But
us and our whole families. Yeah, yeah.
But here's the thing is, like, the reason this is interesting is because are the Clippers all that keen on giving a guy? You don't know how old Paul George is going to be this summer?
No.
34. Like, he's not young, and he's had, like, a ton of injuries over the years. He's obviously bounced back from them, and he's, like, been very good this season for the Clippers. But I could see the Clippers being like, yeah. Like, we just went through this 4 or 5 years of will we, won't we have these guys available? And now Kawhi is, like, at peak form. And so you'd think, okay, like, now is the time to, like, hey, lock this down. Everything's good again. But when do the good times end again, right? When do the injuries creep back in for these guys? And do you want to get out of the Paul George business now when the getting's pretty good before the getting's not good at all? Because, like, he's going to want – probably close to a max deal, right? Like, maybe he can't get himself full 4 years or anything like that at age 34 with the injury history he has, but he's got the Clippers kind of over a barrel if they want. Like, they can't just go and replace Paul George. Maybe they think that they can still be really good with just Kawhi and James Harden, but if you want to be like a real championship contender, you probably need Paul George on that team. They're going to a new stadium next year. Like, do you want to not have Paul George when you're going to a new arena? Like, it's tough. So I think they'll end up paying him, but I see the reasons why not to pay him as well. And that's where the Sixers get interesting, because the reason to pay him is, well, without Joel Embiid, we've been a complete tire fire. We can't withstand not having him on the team. A Tyrese Maxey, Paul George led team would do just fine and tread water in a way that they have not tread water this year without Joel Embiid. And like a Maxey George Embiid trio is kind of freaking perfect and probably makes them the best team in the Eastern Conference if Paul George is healthy. So I get it. You want to maximize the Joel Embiid prime. Maybe you don't care about the back 2-3 years of Paul George contract just because you know that Embiid now, he's almost 30. Like, you got to get this thing done in the next year or two if you're going to do it at all. So maybe that's the thinking here. We know the Sixers have spent the whole season just being like, we have cap space. We're going to do something with it. Ah-ha-ha. Look at all this cap space. Look at us this summer. We're going to spend it all. And maybe they're not lying. Maybe they're just going to go get Paul George. It would be really cool. It would be a pretty risky enterprise, I think, you know, long-term, but would probably give the Sixers the best chance they've had at winning a championship since they had Jimmy Butler on the team. So I could totally see it. It's also kind of weird that Kawhi got his extension in the middle of the season and Paul George has not gotten one yet. Like, you figured those would come hand in hand. So I don't think this is nothing. I'm this feels like there's some smoke here. And I think because of the weird bind the Clippers are in with this, I think it makes it a little more feasible for it to happen.
I think you make a lot of great points, Sean. And I think from the 76ers perspective, like, you're right. Like, they need somebody else. And position-wise, like, Paul George would be a perfect fit. And that would mm-hmm. be a very interesting Eastern Conference trio. Yeah. I do not think that's an interesting Western Conference trio.
You don't? Like,
no.
Maxie? But I do think... is an all-star. Paul George is an all-star. He's an Eastern the MVP.
Eastern Conference all-star. Tyrese Maxey, I don't think, is a Western Conference all-star.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
He's an all-star. So is Vucevic. Anyway. But I just feel like, here's the thing with, like, I just feel like Steve Ballmer is the type of owner who really would not care yeah. about the luxury tax. Like, I think it's really going to come down to how well they do in this year's playoffs. Like, I think yep. if the Clippers are in the Western Conference finals or finals, then there's a world where they talk themselves into being like, we're so close to winning a championship. We're right there. Bring it back. Let's overpay. Let's go into the luxury tax. Let's get this, you know, all these stars into that new arena, blah, blah, blah. But there's also a world where, like, if they're out in the second round, then I think there's, you know, I think then you're like, okay, like, we can't keep doubling down on this. That's when I think things get interesting. And maybe that's why Paul George hasn't gotten that extension yet. And Kawhi has, because they mm-hmm. would keep Kawhi over Paul
as
George.
You should,
as you should. Right. So it's like, incredible. Yeah. I feel like that might be part of it.
For sure. Right. And, you know, I think that's kind of the thing that hangs over every potential player movement thing, right? Is like, the playoffs tell everything. The playoffs shake loose guys who maybe didn't think would be loose because they get mad because they lost in the first round, or yeah. teams reevaluate. Like, I don't think it's beyond the Clippers to lose in the first round. The Pelicans are really good. They're playing way better basketball than the Clippers are right now. And they might actually pass the Clippers for the four seed. They're one game back. Mm. And so if they don't even have home court, that Pelicans team is nasty. They are just like a real pain in the ass to play. They're huge. Like, Trey Murphy just comes in and is like, I'm going to hit 10 threes tonight, bitch. Like, it's really, it's a really good team. And they can kind of beat you in a million different ways.
I think he would love you for that. I think he would absolutely love you for that. You're absolutely right. Like, the Pelicans are coming on so strong right now. And I also feel like, we're in an era, and it's been this way for the past few years now, where, you know, you have to have a dominant center to win. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, you know, the small ball era, as you know, I've talked about being like a fan of the Warriors and stuff, but the small ball era is over. And, for sure. And, like, you know, I feel like, okay, like, the Clippers do have a center, but I mean, they have Zubats, mm-hmm. who's respectable, mm-hmm. but not elite.
I mean, he's basically like doing the Spider-Man meme with Valanciunas at this point. They're very similar dudes.
Yeah, 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 yeah. You know, mm-hmm. so it's like, they have Zubats, they have Daniel Theis and mm-hmm. Mason Plumlee. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it would be them bringing the absolute most that they've ever brought in their entire lives to even, like, attempt to contain who Zion has been these last few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you probably get to see, like, Kawhi guard Zion and vice versa.
Ooh,
and it's like,
I would
Godzilla
love it.
Versus King Kong. Yeah, I'm rooting for that series hard. I think I've maintained that I think if a top four team in the West loses in the first round, it's because they played the Pelicans. Mm. I'm kind of a little Pelican sicko right now. I think they're awesome. And I think they're just kind of like figuring themselves out and realizing their powers a little bit. So, yeah, the Clippers, like, it can get weird for the Clippers. And yeah, if they're in the first round, you know, it's still very possible that Ballmer does the thing and says, hey, we're going to pay everyone anyway. Or, hey, we're going to pay everyone anyway. or whatever his voice sounds like. And, you know, they just are expensive forever. And like, it's not just the tax. Like, they're going to be a second apron team, which is the new thing coming in this summer that's going to really make it hard to, like, move players and make trades and improve your roster. So maybe their best, you know, plot as an already expensive team is keep Paul George, pay James Harden, and just kind of go forward with this group again. It's been really good for long stretches of this season. Not so much lately, but still. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the most likely thing because inertia is a powerful force. But the Sixers are creeping out there, man. And I think like Embiid, George, Maxey as a trio, that's as good as it gets in the Eastern Conference. That probably is good enough to beat the Celtics. That's probably good enough to beat the Bucks as they get older. Although there would be kind of some age questions with the Paul George, Joel Embiid Sixers as well, especially if Kyle Lowry's still kicking around at age 39 or whatever it is, being a backup there. But yeah, I don't think it's like a crazy thing. And the Sixers are in the exact sort of desperate spot where they have to try to win with Joel Embiid while they have him now and he's in his prime, where they might just be crazy enough to say, hey, Paul George, want 4 years on a max? Come play with Joel Embiid. And maybe Paul George says, hell yeah, let's do that.
I just had a crazy, like, Raptors brain kind of thought.
Oh, please share it.
And that is, what if the Sixers got DeMar DeRozan?
Oh, I thought you were going, what if the Raptors use their ample cap space this summer to sign Paul George?
No, no, that would not make sense. I disagree, by the way.
That would be, he's like the exact player they need. They need a 6'8 wing who bombs threes and plays defense. That's like the thing they need most.
So you don't think DeMar would be a good fit on the Sixers?
Maybe a fine fit. I don't think he's like a bad fit anywhere, but I also don't know if 35-year-old DeMar is helping you win in the playoffs. Like, he's really good on the Bulls. It's the Bulls. Like, he's still the defensive liability he's always been. He's still,
yeah, that's true.
It's probably not like he would help, right? Like, I don't think it's a bad thing to have DeMar DeRozan on your basketball team. I just don't know if I'm picking up DeMar at 35 and saying, hey, you're part of our big three now, go make it work.
But then him and Kyle would be back together.
I mean, that'd be sweet. I would love that. I mean, it would break my heart a little bit to see them with Nick Nurse
in Philadelphia.
God, yeah. What are you doing? No, we don't want this. This is bad. That's bad news.
That's why it was my Raptors brain just percolating. Because I want to see DeMar on a winning team. That's the thing. That's right, like something right. I very much wish for in the background of all of this. I need DeMar on a winning team. It hurts my soul to see him, I feel, quote unquote, wasted away.
Stick him on the Thunder or something. That'd be great.
On the Thunder?
For the Thunder. Just... fix
well, they already got what's problems. His name? That guy from Charlotte.
Oh, Gordon Hayward. Yeah, I would say eminently replaceable.
that's their old man. They're like, there we go. That ups our age average. Done. I actually didn't understand that trade beyond just that one reason.
Yeah, I mean. I think the theory of Gordon Hayward for like 5 years now has been better than Gordon Hayward in practice on account of he's broken and can't play basketball really anymore, which sucks for him. It's a bummer, but it's just kind of the way it is. Yeah, I wish the Thunder did more. I wish the Thunder had some stones and did something real because they are really good. And I think they're going to be too weak and slender to make it out of the gauntlet that's going to be the West, sadly. But that's on Sam Presti being a little pick hoarding weirdo, I guess.
I think you're right about that. Although I also think the Thunder are your classic, like, they need playoff experience team.
For sure, for sure. And no better playoff experience than getting your lunch took by Nikola Jokic for 5 games in the conference finals.
There you go. All right, let's move on to our next topic. And that is, I wanted to talk about Wemby. Who very much feels like the present and future of this league. And, you know, there was this whole talk, like, you know, like Ramona Shelbourne did this whole thing on ESPN talking about, like, you know, like, is Wemby happy with San Antonio? Do they have to build around him right away and blah, blah, blah. And then that kind of got some backlash because people were like, hey, man, like, he's a rookie. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to sign his rookie extension.
Rightfully so.
And he's going to be there for a while. And, you know, the Spurs are a good organization. They've got a solid fan base, blah, blah, blah. Wemby has kind of let it be known that he's very much a competitor and that he does want to win and that he's tired of not winning and he doesn't want to live multiple seasons on a losing team kind of waiting for the Spurs to figure out how to build around him, which is why I think that sort of dialogue started. But he didn't in any way allude to not being in San Antonio. No. So I feel like that part of it was a bit egregious. The one thing that kind of like makes me curious is I do feel like they handle him. Okay, this might be inappropriate phrasing, but they handle him with kid gloves is what I'm going to say.
Yeah,
I think they handle him with kid gloves. You know, he's always on limited minutes. He's always on, and he's doing so much in those limited minutes. It's like kind like, of
an unconscionable amount. It's horrifying what he's doing like 29 minutes a game. It's actually ridiculous.
It's insane. But I think what I'm sort of questioning and haven't really heard anybody talk about explicitly is if you do have to handle him with these kid gloves, are we saying that his timeline in this league will not be that of an average star player?
I don't know if I'd go there.
But because to me, I'm like, why? I don't understand the why of it. Is he so injury prone? You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he's coming off of something serious. Like, usually when you see people in limited minutes and all of this, it's because they've had a serious injury or something like that. And that's not the case with him. So I don't understand the kid glove mentality around him, especially as a rookie.
I mean, I don't know if I would say it feels maybe a little strong to say kid gloves. Like, he's playing 29 minutes a game. He's played 61 games. He's on track to play 70 as a rookie, which is pretty good. And I think the Spurs looked around at the start of the year and said, look at this roster. We stink out loud outside of Wemby and like Devin Vassell and maybe Trey Jones. This is not going to be a winning season anyway. Why throw him out there why do the Nick Nurse treatment and play him for 38 minutes for a team that's not going anywhere anyway? It's the first year in the pros, right? Like, I think sort of scaling a guy up is not a bad idea. Hey, like, you know, you're going to get there. You're going to be the face of the league. We know this is happening. But I think because of how just kind of terrible the roster is, how really good the Western Conference is as well, I don't think they really could have talked themselves into a pathway to the postseason, really. And, you know, they're incentivized to try to get another high pick, right? And, you know, I hate tanking stuff. I think it sucks. I think teams should try to win basketball games. Mm-hmm. And I think it, especially this time of year, it like really ruins like the integrity of the standings, because you have a third of the league just handing over wins to whatever contender walks through their arena, aka like the Kings last night, just like, hey, thanks Raptors. We're one game up on the sixth seed now because
you're on our schedule end of March. Exactly. Yeah.
Right. It's ridiculous. And so I don't like tanking. I think there are certainly times this year where the Spurs could have used him more effectively. I think they played him too long as like the four and played too long with Jeremy Sochan as their point guard. Maybe that's their stealth tank move there. But I don't know if they've handled him with like full on kid gloves. I think they're just kind of realizing, hey, like, this season's not the be all end all. He can still be incredible and win Rookie of the Year and be a borderline all defense player and a borderline all NBA player with only playing 29 minutes a game. Why rush it? Why put him through sort of unnecessary risk and overexertion for a team that's going to win 15 games? I kind of get it. And as far as like is he going to be happy? And I mean, it's like, we gotta stop having exactly.
Oh yeah, we gotta stop all every of that. Player. BS.
Like, there is more things to talk about than just, is this guy gonna go somewhere else? Like, no. Like, we can like be more thoughtful in the way we talk about basketball. It's more interesting that way, frankly. And yeah, like, I saw the Ramona Shelburne thing. Like, what are we doing? there's just like. Come
I mean,
on.
I'm sure she's, you know, an employee of ESPN and is doing
for
her
sure, job. For
but, you know,
sure.
But yeah,
it's not just Ramona Shelburne. It's everybody, not at all. Right? It's the whole sort of transaction industrial complex that just like, oh, there's a good player, bad team. Is he going to want out? Like, it doesn't. There's not always this sort of direct line to draw, especially for a rookie who frankly has zero control over the situation. What's he going to do this summer? Be like, you guys didn't trade for Trae Young. I want out. The Spurs will just be like, no, like, we're not going to do that. We're going to play it out, and you're not going to sit out 3 years in your early 20s as you wait to hit restricted free agency, which we still have control over. Like, there's just no precedent, no, like, mechanism by which that could happen. And so it's really stupid to talk about. We should talk about the dude who's putting up like 5x5s every other damn night and putting up 7-block nights like it's nothing. Like, that's the interesting thing here. And, you know, I think the good part here is that I don't think the Spurs are going to be awful for much longer, because Wemby on his own is unbelievable. And I think they probably end up being like a fringe play-in playoff team next year, because he just... Like, I'm pretty sure, like, since the start of December, Zach Lowe's used this stat on his pod a lot lately. They're like a positive team with him on the floor since December, and they are like a 14-win team. That's crazy. Like, they are just getting waxed in the minutes he's not playing. Winning the minutes he's playing. And if they get, like, two or three more useful good players this summer, or, like, God forbid, trade for a star, they're going to be really good right away. Like Paul George!
I know. I look, like, I completely agree in terms of, like, you know, players being happy, unhappy. We got to stop all of that. I guess I use the term kids gloves because I just couldn't think of a better way to phrase what I meant.
By the way I feel they're
handling him. I think
it's unfair to use that term.
Like, yeah, well, I mean, I'm not trying to talk down on him is my point. But, like, you know, okay, so for example, someone like Cade Cunningham is on a team that obviously has no chance of doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they thought at the very beginning of the year they could do something, but it became pretty clear pretty quickly that
you
this
lose
year's...
32 of your first 34 games.
It became clear quickly that this team wasn't going to go anywhere. He's coming off a season-ending injury, and he doesn't play limited minutes, to my knowledge.
I mean, he's only played 58 games this year, so...
He's been out some games, but I think the games he plays, he has pretty solid minutes, or at least over 30 a game. So I guess it's just, I just don't, like... I guess maybe, like, what you're saying, it's like, the team isn't going to go anywhere, we're going to lose anyways, blah, blah, blah. Maybe that's just, like, the Spurs mentality. As I'm talking about it, you know, and thinking about it with you, it's like, Greg Popovich did kind of invent the load management thing.
Yeah. And, like,
so
we know the biometrics on Wemby.
I'm like, okay, he is kind of the father of this. So from that perspective, it makes sense. It's just there's so many players on losing teams who have had injuries who don't play limited minutes. I guess that's kind of where I was coming from, where I was like, I don't get why this is happening, but I understand what you're saying. So maybe we've solved it. Cause I haven't seen anyone explicitly say that about the Spurs for everything that is talked about with him.
I also think too, like, I don't know, you're the Spurs. You've just been gifted by the luck of the lottery, the prospect who's probably going to be the face of the NBA for the next 15 years and take the mantle from LeBron James.
Crazy.
He's also 7'4" and built like a weird alien beanpole man. Mm-hmm. I can, like, understand if you want to be a little cautious about not having that dude thrown into the full fury of the NBA right away. Like, let him eat some sandwiches first. Like, build him up a little bit.
God, I feel...
Look at the history of 7'4" guys, too, right? Like, it's scary. Like, big dudes get hurt. And so I understand completely why they're like... You know, Cade Cunningham is like, he's 6'8".
He's
like
a guard.
He's like built like Wemby is like a, he's unique in many different ways. And I think that also feeds into the unique way in which the Spurs have handled him as a rookie, because like, I wouldn't want to fuck that up. It's like getting gifted like a Maserati and like not knowing how to drive stick and being like, am I going to like drive this into a wall right now? Like, you want to be careful with that thing. You want to figure that out before you go full speed on the highway, I think.
I think that's true. I mean, yeah, I guess, I don't know. I guess maybe to, you know, things have changed, right? Because, like, they didn't handle Tim Duncan that way.
They didn't, no.
You know what I mean? And then they fully, they were obviously a better team also.
Yeah, that was a contender, like,
they won. They won. He won in his rookie year. So, all right, I'm wrong. Everyone can shit on me.
It's all right. You just haven't had any water, Catherine.
Just dehydrated and parched and not thinking straight. It's fine. All right, let's move on to our Raptors. Homer moment. And Sean, this past week, we had the jersey swap scene around the world. I don't know how else to phrase that. There will never be a jersey swap so viral unless Grady Dick is involved.
It's going to make the rounds around the league, I bet. And
that's what everyone's saying.
All sorts of fun pairings.
You know, when he was asked about it, he just said, like, he's a friend of mine and that's it, with what I would consider a somewhat cheeky look on his face. I think he knows exactly what he's doing. And, you know, if that's your name, hey, why not have a bit of a sense of humor about it? Mm-hmm. Oh my God, this is so crazy. This is completely like, my therapist told me that she had a gynecologist with the last name Dick. And I was like, I'm out. I'm not going to that office. Huh. I am absolutely not going to that office.
I mean, it's one way to market oneself.
I get having a sense of humor about your name, but that's on another level.
It's like, change the spelling or something. Make it a D-Y-C-K or something like that. Like, just like.
That was really on another level.
The old English spelling. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, you know, anyway, I just couldn't even believe that. That's still living rent free in my mind since my last session. But this jersey swap, Sean, what did you make of this?
I mean, the Zoomers have taken over the NBA. I don't know, man. I thought watching the clip and the lead up to it is even better than just like the photo, because they're clearly just like little boys at a sleepover.
I agree.
Like,
what if we this would be so funny. Don't tell mom.
And then they do it and it's great. It's fantastic. I have no problem with it. It's fun. It's silly. It's dumb. It's 20-year-olds being 20-year-olds. I'm sure we all did equally immature, silly things and wordplay at age 20. I'm just excited to see how we can level up from here. Which players is he going to go find? And like, what sort of abstractions is he going to make? Like, I don't know. It's like an ode to doing it on your honeymoon with Drew Holiday. Holiday Dick. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe there's something there. I don't know. But I...
Imagine Drew Holiday's like, I don't know you, man. Like, I don't know
you. Okay, there's two other Holidays
in the
league.
We're not
friends. You just go ask Justin or Aaron. Yeah.
We don't hang out. Like, he's like, I'm not 20 anymore.
The one regrettable thing is he didn't even get the funniest guy on the Magic he could have paired with.
Which is Suggs?
Jalen Suggs, yeah. Like, clearly the better one. But
well, I mean, if they are if they're legit friends, then at least that came from a genuine place.
Right.
It's
right.
Like, it's going to become a thing in the NBA where it's like, don't come near me, man.
Get that dick away from me.
Yeah. Like Steph Curry is going to be like, nah, man. Like, don't even come near me. There is no Dick Curry. There will be none. You know, like, it's just, yeah, like, we can't just like at the end of games, Grady Dick is just like on the court looking to trade his jersey with someone. Like, it's in, like, his jersey's in his hand and he's looking for someone to like do the joke with, and they're all just like running away. That'd be so stupid.
It's very dumb. My question to you,
or maybe they'll be running towards him and being like, please.
Right? I want to be viral too. Yeah, yeah.
Please,
my name
jersey.
Is the name for you.
I want your jersey. You didn't even, you got a DNP tonight. Please, can I have your jersey?
My question is, like, at what point, like, I do a daily podcast about the Raptors. I had to like get the dick jokes out of my system pretty quickly. Otherwise, it would have just consumed me. Mm. And like, I wonder, like, is it going to be like year three, year four, like 10 years in? Is Grady Dick still getting like, I guess he like plays into it when he's doing stuff like this. But how many seasons of Grady Dick in the NBA will we have to go until we go a whole season without a dick joke? Is it zero? Is this like never happening? Or
I don't know. I mean, I don't feel like Yeah, like, I don't think Rudy Gay went through any of this.
No.
Right? Like, I don't know.
We got, like, some of the visiting broadcasters are having entirely too much fun with his name, I would say. It's, I don't know. I look, I'm not above very dumb, childish jokes, but we gotta get, like, I appreciate Grady at least sort of stepping into new ground with it and not just, like, you know, doing the broadcaster thing where it's like Dick Splash that everyone's done so far this year. Like, he's like doing some physical comedy with it now, which I appreciate. I'm glad that we're kind of advancing the form.
Yeah, I don't know. I think as long as, like, he keeps having fun with it, then it won't end.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Just imagine, like, a 36-year-old grizzled veteran Grady Dick still making jokes about his name. Then we'll know the Zoomers really were the Lost Generation. Yeah, like, we'll know that that was, okay, the Zoomers were, in fact, doomed.
We'll have to see. I mean, you know, this kind of goes into our next topic, but there's not much to play for.
There's nothing, Catherine.
So
it's a barren wasteland desert where we've been talking about this Grady Dick jersey thing for like 4 days, and it still feels like the most relevant news around the team.
First time on this podcast, though.
Oh no, I'm not.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing to talk about, but there's just like nothing else. Like, nothing has come into the news cycle since then to replace that, which I think speaks to the current state of affairs.
Yeah, and you know what, like, we, you know, we can move on to our next topic, just, you know, which is the state of this current team. You know, shout out to the Barrett family. You know, like, they've obviously, like, suffered an awful tragedy this last week. You know, just really, really sad to hear. Hope they're all okay. Yeah, I mean, that's just one more key player not on the team with the team right now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it just sucks. Like, I know people are frustrated, you know, because we're losing and this, that, and the other, and the anxiety of this elusive draft pick and so on and so forth. But, you know, Freddie and I were kind of chatting, shout out to Freddie Rivas. We were chatting a little bit on Twitter today, and, you know, it's kind of like, at a certain point, you just kind of have to accept the hand you were dealt. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't the vision. It's just sometimes
not their team. Yeah, it's
things
just like
happen.
Some guys playing some ball with a jersey on. It's not their team at all.
Yeah, and it's just like, it sucks, and this happens with injuries and so on and so forth. And, you know, obviously the second half of the season isn't going to go as planned. We just got to ride it out, and then there'll be lots to look forward to next year. Like, I like my kind of optimistic approach is like, we're going to be better next year, and then 2 years from now we can be where like the Orlando Magic are now. True. You know, that's kind of like that's my hope for this team.
Yeah,
at least
I don't even think it's like out of the question, depending what they do this summer, that they're in that sort of like 6, 7, 8 range next year. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we saw some pretty interesting stuff for the very fleeting moments where they had a real team together, like before Scotty got hurt, after the deadline. There was some like good stuff happening in there. They were like a middle of the road offense, middle of the road defense. They were figuring some things out lineup wise. Emmanuel Quickly, even after Scotty got hurt, was having a really great stretch there of just like, oh, like, this is lead guard stuff, and like very good lead guard stuff. Mm. And I do think like you can bake in a lot of internal growth for this team over the summer. You have RJ's 23, Quickly's 24, Barnes is 22, Grady Dick is 20. Like, these are young players. Young players, while it's not always linear, tend to get better. And so I think there's a pretty good shot that with the sort of floor that a Poeltl, Olynyk center rotation gives you, and the cap flexibility they have this summer, the draft picks they'll have coming in, maybe or maybe not. Like, I think it stands a chance of being like a pretty competitive team, maybe not a good team, but a competitive team. And like, my goal for next year is just like, be better than the Bulls. Like, better than the Bulls, you've done your work. It's fantastic.
Oh my God,
amazing.
If the Bulls run it back another year.
Oh, they're going to.
Really?
They're paying DeMar so much money. No, I have no idea what they're going to do.
Oh, that would be the saddest thing. I'm not even a Bulls fan. That would be the saddest thing. if they just run it back. I can't even imagine.
At least Coby White's like doing stuff where it's like, oh, we have like a young player who doesn't stink now. So that's
helpful. And then he's not gonna win. He's not gonna win most improved because of the team record.
Yeah, I mean, he might anyway, because he's been like one of the best players.
I'm having
a
mint because I am parched. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. No mints needed over here. I'm feeling fresh. I'm feeling light. I'm feeling lubed. It's fantastic. No.
Bucket and mints.
But yeah, you know, I think they have a chance of being like a pretty decent team next year, which is you know, all you can hope for. And yeah, there's just like, it's a weird thing too, where I don't know where you stand on it. I am of the mind that like, just get the pick to the Spurs this year, send it over. I don't care if it's the seventh or eighth pick. It's worse optically than it is in actual practice, I think, because this draft, Catherine, sucks. I've like really started to like deep dive into my draft coverage this week because there's nothing else to talk about. And yeah, it's like a grim scene. And you talk to anyone who like covers this stuff. Like there's a guy who his name's Richard Stamen. He does stuff for Locked On NBA Big Board. It's our podcast over on the network that covers the draft. And I asked him straight up this morning. I was like, would you rather have the 15th pick in the 2025 draft or the sixth pick in this draft? He said 15th next year. Like this draft stinks and next year is loaded. And I think there's just sort of this, there's a lot of Raptors fans who think I'm an idiot for being like, but top six pick, you got to get that talent in the door. It's like, hey, that player's not helping you win next season anyway. Like, it's just not, you're not, he's not bolstering the Scotty Barnes era in year one next year. And I think it's like kind of short-sighted to think, oh, well, we get the instant player now. Like, it's instant gratification. We get that guy now when you could get a better player in a year. And also, not spend an entire year thinking about whether or not the Spurs are getting your pick or not. The joy and relief of just sending it out the door and never thinking about it again. Like, I think there's like so much value to that, like psychologically as a fan and as a franchise too. Like, they can go into next season, not feel like they need to be worried about, oh, what if we're like the eighth worst team again? Like, God, we're going to give the eighth pick in that draft to the Spurs? That's dicey. Like, I just think there's... Yeah, to me, get the pick off the books. You already have the Pacers pick and the Pistons pick in the start of the second round this year anyway. Like, you have two shots in this draft where everyone kind of says at between 10 and 40, it's all just sort of a mishmash of dudes who may or may not be decent role players.
Between 10 and 40, that's rough.
It's a very flat draft. And even at the top, like, it's not super talented at the top. Sixth overall in this draft is not a place that's like a primo pick. It's just not. It's not a good draft. And anyone who covers this stuff for a living will tell you that. So I am fully on the board of hope like hell that they convey the pick. Yeah, it'll hurt to see the Spurs draft seventh or eighth on draft night. Guess what? It'll hurt a lot more to see them draft seventh or eighth if things don't go well next year and they are conveying that pick to the Spurs. Not to mention, like, you have all your picks unencumbered. Like, if you don't convey the pick this year, then you can't trade future picks even further out because of the constant protections and rolling over. So just like, get it out the door. Bye. Do not think about it anymore. Clear your mind. Accept the Jakob Poeltl trade for what it was. And you can go into next year with a couple of draft picks that you have anyway. And the knowledge that, hey, things could be better this year, but if they're not, and they're the seventh or eighth worst team again, you're going to get a damn good pick without having to sweat it out in a very good draft with lots of potential star talent at the top. So that's my kind of rant against the sort of must keep the pick sort of concept, because I just think it's silly and short-sighted.
Yeah, and I think like, well, I also think this whole pick situation is somewhat convoluted and it isn't a straightforward trade. So yeah. I do think for the average fan, it is kind of a lot to wrap your head around.
Sure. So, yeah. 100%.
You know, I think like when Pete, like, you know, when your average fan is like, no, we need the pick, it's like, I understand where they're coming from.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, there's all this other context, you know, also, kind of like, in the fold.
I know giving up the seventh or eighth pick feels bad. Jakob Poeltl's still on the team and he's good. And he's very clearly incredibly important to this team playing real basketball. Like, I would trade the seventh pick in the draft for a Jakob Poeltl type player. pretty much any day. I'm probably like biased in that I just prefer to have good players on my basketball team and not, you know, question marks and 19-year-olds who are dart throws. But like Jakob Poeltl sets the table for this team to play competitive basketball with his screening, with his roll gravity, with his passing, with his rim protection. Like, he does the stuff you need to have a center doing to be a good, like effectively coherent basketball team. And he does that. So if it ends up being the seventh pick in a, like a historically bad draft for Jakob Poeltl at the end of the day, like, I think that is an undeniable win of a trade for the Raptors. But, you know, we won't know that until we see what that prospect eventually becomes. I get it. But in, on principle, like, I think bad trade for like the circumstances, and it led to this season of hell in lots of different ways. But I think at the end of the day, when the dust settles, if you're giving up the seventh pick to the Spurs and you have Jakob Poeltl on your team, I think it's fine. And then you go into next season, never thinking about it again. And that's, I think, God, how nice would it be to just not think about this draft pick, Catherine? I want so hard to never think about it again.
As someone who has a daily podcast, I could see why you have probably thought about it more than most people on planet Earth.
I'm like full going shining mode, losing my mind. It's all pick and no wins make Sean an insane boy. It's killing me.
Yeah, which I understand. I agree with you, but I agree because this is everyone saying a historically bad draft. It would be hilarious if it turned out not to be.
Oh, of course.
But I don't think that's actually the case. Like, I think, you know, when everyone's saying it's a historically bad draft class, I think that's true. I think even you're kind of seeing it in the NCAA this year, where like women's basketball for the first time is actually getting more coverage than men's basketball, which I think is very telling, because that doesn't happen easily or lightly. And that's because women's basketball in the NCAA right now is more exciting and historic than the men's side right now. And I think if the NCAA thought they had superstars to market, they would be.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's just, it's the way college has gone, where the best teams are the ones who have like multiple year college players, because, you know, that you can build up an actual system. You have like the Dukes and Kentuckys who just cycle through really talented one and done guys. And like, it's just like it's a weird product. It's like bad. It's like entertaining because it's bad, I guess. But like, I'd rather watch entertaining because it's good. And that's what the women's side is definitely right now. And especially like, there's lots of prospects in this draft who are not college guys and who are maybe more interesting. There's guys from the G League Ignite. There's guys from over in Europe. There's a guy playing in Australia who might be the number one pick, Alex Saar. So like the college crop in particular is like especially grim this season. And it's sort of like the draft of ifs and buts, where it's like, oh, this guy's 7'2" and blocks 3 shots a game, but he might not be able to play more than 12 minutes a night. This guy is like one of the best defensive prospects since Tony Allen, but he shoots 20% from 3 and 50% on free throws and may never figure out how to play offense even a tiny little bit. Oh, this guy on this mid-major team is an incredible scorer. He's outstanding, but he had 2 cardiac arrests that made him so he's 25 years old going into the draft, and he almost died twice. Like, that's the draft, Catherine. It's a bad draft. And so, I'm just like, it's making me more bummed out about the current state of the Raptors having to like dive into these prospects, because it's just like, all right, like, he seems fine, I guess, but it's nothing sexy at all. Yeah.
Yeah, well, at the trade deadline, when Masai did his press conference, he did talk about, or maybe that was post Siakam trade when he did his press conference, he talked about how like they don't necessarily plan on keeping these picks and that they might be looking to trade these picks. So there might be like some sort of a draft day trade or moves in the summer that happen. I mean, Masai is not a tanking president and GM, right, with Bobby, and I just feel like I bet it's killing them as well, like the state of this team, and this is definitely not what they wanted. And I do anticipate them making more moves. I don't think it's just going to be like, oh, this was the Pistons second round pick and let's put them in the 905. I mean, it could work out that way with that pick in particular, but I feel like it's good. It's not going to just be that, is my point. Like, I feel like there's going to be more happening.
I mean, they already traded one of their picks for Kelly Olynyk, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
They held true to their word already in that we're not going to make all these picks. They were right. Like, Kelly Olynyk is now here, and I would take Kelly Olynyk over the 28th pick in this draft any day. It's not even close.
I mean, there might be a team that could use, like, you know, Chris Boucher, who, you know, he was finally starting to get some minutes before that injury, but, you know, I want to see Chris Boucher being more utilized somewhere, and I think he could be. Like, I just feel like, you know, this team does have trade prospects, you know, beyond the, you know, 3 to 4 players that we're trying to build around right now.
Totally, and I think, like, they have, like, big swing, like, prospects as well. Like, they have the Bruce Brown contract. They have these surplus picks. They have that future Pacers pick. They have the extra pick this year from the Pacers. Like, there's a world in which they go and you know, sort of take advantage of a team that crashes out of the playoffs, a team that's getting expensive, that maybe doesn't want to hang on to all their players or can't hang on to other players, and you can kind of swoop in and say, hey, you know, well, New Orleans, not to, you know, go back to Trey Murphy, but like, hey, Trey Murphy, you know, you're not maybe going to get paid by the Pelicans. They're pretty expensive. They've like never paid the tax in their history. Maybe you swap and get a Trey Murphy or something like that. That's like a pie in the sky, like best case scenario. But like, there are going to be guys who shake loose. There always are. And the Raptors have the cap flexibility. They have the Bruce Brown contract. They have, you know, lots of extra picks on hand now, or a couple extra picks at least. And I think that they're going to be in the mode of, hey, like if we can find ourselves the sort of wing of the future to pair between Barrett and Barnes at the 2-3-4, and you have Quickly and Poeltl, like, I think they'll try to do it. I think they're like, they're not going to take it lying down and just say, oh, well, we got no good players this summer. Let's just be bad again next year. Let's have no defense whatsoever. Like, there's going to be something, whether it's free agent additions with their cap space or trades. And that's the thing that's keeping me going right now, because the basketball that's currently happening, Catherine, stinks.
It does. I think the thanks Bruce Brown post that we get in the summer is going to be so hilarious and stupid, because I feel like he thought he was going to move the second he was traded here and then just wasn't. But yeah, I think it's time to move on to our hottie highlight of the week. And, you know, this week, this is maybe controversial, because I feel like everyone's expecting it's got to be the jersey. It's got to be the jersey swap. How could that not be the highlight of the week? But the problem is that that was such a big deal. I was trying to say that without too many sexual innuendos. That I decided that we should have a different hottie highlight of the week. And so this is going to Darko, because he is reigniting hosting the open practice for the coaches. So basically, if you are a local basketball coach, like, you know, for kids or for your rec league or something like that, there is going to be an open practice that you can attend and learn a bunch of X's and O's and stuff from the coaching staff. I think this is a brilliant program that the Raptors started doing a few years ago. And I absolutely love it. I'm not a coach, but I want to go. Like, I want to figure out a way to just make myself some weird coach profile just so I can go and see this for myself, because I'm such a nerd. But I think initiatives like this are great. I think, especially when your team is bad, you have to, in my opinion, galvanize the fan base in different ways. Like, I remember in, you know, because I'm old, but like in the Vince Carter years, they used to have a free practice during preseason. So basically, it was like a Sunday afternoon, and you could just like see the Raptors like really up close. And, you know, I mean, it was Vince Carter days, right? So he's doing all kinds of like dunks and highlights for the kids and stuff. And like, it was so fun. Like, I just remember, like, it was fun to like watch them scrimmage and do all these different things. And now it's 5-on-5. And like, they made it really entertaining for the fans. And it was like, and it was completely free. And it was like, that is how you get young people and families excited about you. When you're not necessarily like a championship contender. And I feel like the Raptors kind of need to go back to that. And hopefully, I'm hoping that this is kind of the start of that again.
Yeah, I love it. I'm mad I didn't know this was going on because I've started to do a little coaching this year at my wife's school with the wee little ones, and it's very fun. That. It's super fun, and I feel like I'm an idiot half the time. And so it would have been nice to be like, "Hey, Darko, teach me how to do coaching."
Is it too late to register?
I mean, it's already happened. So,
I thought it was happening.
No, it already happened. Yeah, but I'm going everyone. To. Hopefully get in there for next year, which would be pretty sweet. I think it's such a cool thing to do. I think not being like a gatekeeper of coach wisdom is a nice, cool thing. I think a lot of coaches probably are like, oh, you can't have my trade secrets. I'm a genius. And, I don't think Darko's wired that way. I think Darko just like seems like a really good dude. And I'm rooting so hard for that guy. And it sucks that he's been like handed such a raw deal in his first year as a head coach, where it's like, hey, here's this team. We don't actually want the best player on the team anymore. So figure that out. And then we're going to trade the best defender 2 months into the year. So figure that out. And then also we're going to trade the best player eventually, even though it kind of makes sense after we traded the other really good guy to keep the best player around, but we're going to trade him anyway, because we made our minds up. And so figure that out, make sure the vibes are good and get the culture back, and also improve player development, because it's been bad lately. And also the back third of the season is going to be nothing because all of our players are going to be hurt. Have fun, Darko. Like, it's been a hell of a first year. And I think all things considered, yeah, it's probably a bit like an incomplete when it comes to like the tactical stuff. But I think as just like a guy who's been able to shepherd this team through a hell season, pretty damn impressive. And for stretches where he's had actual players, they've gone and played pretty good basketball and, you know, made strides on offense. He even had the offense with Dennis Schroeder at the helm humming pretty well before the OG trade, right? And that should not have happened, but he did. He figured it out. And so I'm pretty high on Darko, and all this other stuff I think is just like nice added layers of good guy Darko. It's nice to have a good guy, right? Like, yeah, I know there's so many people who are like, I wish Ime Udoka were a coach. He's an asshole. And it's like, why would you want an asshole to be your coach? Like, if you can have a good guy who's also successful, like, that is way better to me. And so I'm rooting real hard for Darko because he seems like a genuinely awesome dude that people love. So love this coach thing. Hopefully it's an annual tradition that he does, and hopefully I can be there next time and learn some how to do some good plays for the children, who will certainly not retain anything because their attention spans are broken.
How old, like, what's the age group that you're coaching?
Like grade 6, 7, and 8. So
okay,
yeah, like 11, 12, 13.
But
yeah,
that's really sweet. And I do think that that's an age where, you know, they could understand, like, yeah, you know, a basic pick and roll or something.
Oh, know? Yeah. We're instilling some stuff. We're like Jokic offense when we can. We need
it's amazing.
We need to have bigs who can pass, which is a hard thing to find in the 11, 12, 13 age range. But if you have one, boy, oh boy, you're cooking.
Oh, and then naming it after, you know, like naming plays after players. I love that concept. Mm-hmm, like, I love when people do that. And then that gets them energized. Like, yeah, like we're doing, you know, the Jokic play or the, you know, whatever play. So,
kids hate Jokic, though. Kids do not get Jokic. Whoa. All I get is, why can't we be like LaMelo Ball and I want to like heave myself off of the top of the gym?
they love LaMelo. Well, because of that reality show. Or do they love him for basketball reasons? Because who's watching him?
Because, like,
who's YouTube watching a Hornets game? A oh, yeah, no, okay. I was like, they're not watching a Hornets game.
No, no.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Mm-hmm. Different generation shit. Just exposed.
I'm telling you, man, the Zoomers, is it a new generation now, the young kids? Is it like a something after, like post-Zoomer?
Well, whatever? The idea of consuming basketball just through highlights and not through watching a game. Like, I've caught highlights, but I also watch games.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's so weird. The
Zoomers are taking over.
I would never, like, I couldn't even consider myself a fan if I only caught highlights. That would be crazy to me. Whatever,
just there for the dunks. I'm not here to tell anyone to be a fan. If you just want to watch dunks, I can understand. Dunks are cool.
Okay, fine. You want to watch dunks? That's fine. Just don't call yourself a basketball fan. Call yourself a dunks fan.
Exactly.
All right. I'm an old woman. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in.
Don't worry. I'm old too. I've been like railing against the Zoomers for the last half an hour. I feel extremely old.
Oh my God! I'll have to have a Karina Mustafa on this show to defend the Zoomers of the world. But thank you, Sean, again for joining me this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Sean, let everybody know what you're up to and where people can find you on the internets.
Yeah, I'm watching the Raptors, so you don't have to. Over at Locked On Raptors, you can listen to the podcast wherever podcasts are found. And I'm also on YouTube, so you can go watch the YouTube version and do all the nice things. Just click the buttons to support the show wherever it's like, oh, like or subscribe or whatever. Do all those things because it makes me feel good and helps the algorithms and whatnot. At least that's what I'm told. I've never gone into the algo and really checked for myself, but that's what they say. So support the show that way. That's basically all I got going on. It's daily podcasting about your favorite almost basketball team.
There you go. Thank you, everyone, again. I mean, yeah, you should also like this show and subscribe to Raptors Republic if you haven't already. I don't tell people to do that, and I probably should. Maybe I will someday. I'll start to sound natural as I say that. Thank you again for listening, for tuning in on YouTube. Appreciate it, as always. And we'll catch you next week. Bye, everyone.